This is day four of this September-October 2013 seven-day session. We were reading yesterday from an anthology of Rinzai Zen teaching, Japanese Rinzai Zen teaching. The book is called The Original Face. It's translated and edited by Thomas Cleary. And we left off with the teachings of a Zen master, Bunan. You should always act with kindness and compassion. People think that kindness and compassion mean doing things, but actually giving people things is the foremost kindness and compassion. Well, it's a kind of a funny distinction. I mean, giving is a kind of doing, but so rather than performing acts of service, giving people things is the foremost kindness and compassion. And, historically, the highest kind of giving, or dana, this is the first of the six perfections of the six paramitas, the highest giving is giving the dharma. But beyond that, a sort of a transcendent kind of giving is zazen. This is the ultimate gift, ultimate offering, because it's not to any one person, it's to all beings. And it is a giving in a very real sense. We're extending ourselves, we're opening We're giving up our thoughts. This is really the ultimate giving. Renouncing our thoughts. These thoughts that bind us to the self and to suffering. These thoughts that bind us to greed in its many forms, hostility in its many forms, delusion, confusion. Yes, giving people things is the foremost kindness and compassion. Yeah, in the sense that you can't hold on to anything when you're doing true zazen. It's a non-clinging. He continues, fire is something that burns, water is something that wets, a Buddha is someone who practices compassion. Teaching people to be kind and compassionate to others means imitating the Buddha. If you just practice compassion, you will certainly become good. Well, probably any religion would be with him up to this point. But what distinguishes Zen, perhaps, is that it goes to the source of compassion. He says it himself. The basis of compassion is purity of the mind. I could say emptiness of the mind. So, on more obvious, a kind of Buddhist meditation which compassion is more explicit is in the metta meditation. Metta meaning loving kindness. In metta meditation, we are radiating feelings of loving kindness to any number of people, including ourselves. Zen works differently. Zen, by emptying the mind entirely of all concepts or feelings or intentions, by emptying the mind, we clear the way for our innate loving kindness to flow without explicitly doing it as an intention. The basis of compassion is purity of the mind. Because purity or emptiness of the mind means we're free of the notion of self and other. And when we are free of that, then we are free to respond to those who are suffering, those who are in need. So compassion and loving kindness arise out of this, an empty mind. Or as Bunan is using the word, a pure mind, a mind unstained by self and other, us and them, a mind that is undivided. Purity of the mind, he says, is not a single thing. Not a single thing means nothing at all. It is beyond the reach of speech, beyond affirmation and negation. If there is any affirmation or negation in your heart will be obstructed by that affirmation and negation. If there is no affirmation or negation, then heaven and earth are one. If there is something, it separates you from heaven. This you should well understand. I have no question but that metta meditation can work very well for what it does. It's just Zen just goes to the root of it all, underneath any kind of design. And Zen Master Zhao Zhou, Joshu, was once asked, on what should I focus my mind? Or on what should I place my mind? And he said, where there is no design, no agenda, no intention, no matter how exalted, holding to nothing whatever, but dwelling in prajna wisdom. He continues, since you will surely eventually die, you should set your mind diligently on the way of enlightenment. There's a Chinese proverb, discipline begins with the fear of death. If we are not in denial about our death, then we're more likely to find the time to sit every day. It's no guarantee we have to have an affinity with the Dharma, an affinity with sitting. People can be, I suppose, acutely aware of death and still not sit. But when we do have that bent toward meditation, then we're definitely more likely to find the motivation when we're aware of the certainty of death and the uncertainty of the time of death. There is no enlightened Buddha outside your own heart. Always keep a pure and clean mind and heart. When thoughts of your own body come up, as long as such thoughts are always there, this life lasts but a little while, and you will fall into a hell and suffer forever and ever. So, he's talking about attachment, not being attached to the body, not being overly concerned with the body. We talked yesterday, I think, about a decent balance with regard to the body, where we respect it enough to care for it, not mistreat it in any way, but without getting too materialistic about who and what we are. It's a very limited way of moving through life, is to be focused on the body too much. Of course, what's too much? It's for each person to sort out for herself or himself. Here's an interesting section that I guess probably the translator who titles it "Things People Are Always Wrong About." Okay, all right, let's listen to this. First, hating to be fooled by others while liking to be fooled by oneself. I think again of Zhao Zhou. He was asked, what is the first principle of the one wearing Buddhist robes? In other words, what is the first principle of one practicing the Dharma? He said, not to deceive oneself. Now let's appreciate that any time we are caught in our thoughts, we're deceiving ourselves. Every time we are believing a mind state, a passing mind state, as something essential to our nature, we're being deceived. And then on top of that, we have the job of being vigilant to the ways, the self-serving ways that we deceive ourselves, the stories we tell ourselves, that support our egotistical views. This is what makes so practice so humbling, is especially in Sesshin, as we move through these layers of illusion, delusion, in which we over and over again come to see how we have deceived ourselves about ourself, life, the games we play in our minds. Here's another one. Knowing, this is what people are always wrong about, knowing others die, but not realizing one's own death, or not acknowledging or not facing one's own inevitable death. Let's make it that. is the great collective human denial. It's the denial of our death. The Buddha talked about four levels of denial of death. The lightest is, well, it's not really denial, but four responses to others' death. One is where someone in your village dies, and you wake up, you notice it. Then the another is when someone in your family dies. You don't really face death until someone in your family dies. And then the third is your immediate family. And then the last is when you yourself are aware of your imminent death. That, of course, is the hardest to deny. But even then, we know about Elizabeth Kubler-Ross's stages of death, starting with denial. Here's another thing people are always wrong about: discriminating others' right and wrong while not acting properly oneself. This is pretty human tendency as well, finding fault with others, being able to see others' faults while not really facing one's own. Suffering from want and not knowing how to avoid it. Thinking that original nothingness is nothing. Here, this needs a little clarification. Thinking original nothingness, here, capitalized nothingness, is the basic experience in the Dharma. Nothingness here meaning shunyata, the substratum of all phenomena. The insubstantiality of all phenomena. And this is, we can call it emptiness, but it is not the nothing in the negative sense that we ordinarily think of in our conventional language. It is a nothing that is vibrant and potent. And then another thing people are wrong about, setting up something in the way of enlightenment. In other words, making a thing out of it. Which is obviously a mistake if you can believe that we are all enlightened from the very beginning. We make a thing of it. And then we've created a big obstacle that we have to work with. But this is probably one of the most very common delusions. It's a delusion that brings us to practice. If we aspire to reach a state called enlightenment, that mistake, if you'll call it that, is one that can be really a great motivation. So then when we awaken to the fact that we've always been enlightened, then we see, well, we just see that. Here's another one, Bunan's Regulations for Disciples. He starts off by issuing a warning to his monks. A monk is the greatest evil on earth. He goes through the world without labor. He is a great thief. In other words, come on, you guys, don't just fritter away your time, but apply yourself. When the fruits of discipline and practice are fulfilled, and one may be a teacher of others, he is a precious jewel in the world. There are innumerable teachers of the ways of the world, but teachers of the great way are rare. Do not use unwisely even a piece of paper or half a penny. This is a real basic element in Zen training, is to be mindful of how we're using resources. Paper, yes. Water, not leaving the water running. This is one of the Sesshin guidelines. While taking a shower and you're soaping yourself and you're not in the water, why have it running? And even with your hands, if you're going for the 14-second thing with the soaping your hands, medical advice is when you're washing your hands, last I heard it was 14 seconds. Well, why have the faucet gushing water for those times if your hands aren't in it? It's so simple just to turn it off while you're soaping and then turn it back on. Certainly food could be the most precious commodity not to waste. It's a great ongoing struggle for the kitchen. It always has been. How to serve enough food without any of it going to waste, when you never know for sure how much people are going to eat, how hungry they're going to be in any given meal. It's a real struggle for the kitchen. Be constantly austere with the body and do not do things for the sake of the body. The enemy of Dharma and Buddha is the body. Look upon accepting things from others as like poison. When you have completely realized the great way, then you should accept those things which people hold dear. This is because it helps those people. Yeah, there's this basic idea in Buddhism of merit, and that you can actually give people merit by accepting things from them. How could anyone develop the merit, the good karma of giving, if no one accepted, received things? During the period of practice and effort, should you be beaten and trampled by others, you should rejoice that the effects of the deeds you yourself produced in the past are being exhausted. Well, this goes back to the first patriarch, Bodhidharma. We have very little teaching in existence from Bodhidharma, but this is one of them. It's called the requital of hatred. When a pursuer of the Tao falls into any kind of suffering and trials, he should think and say to himself thus: during the innumerable past kalpas, I have abandoned the essential and pursued the accidentals, carried along on the restless waves of the sea of existences, and thereby created endless occasions for hate, ill will, and wrongdoing. Although my present suffering is not caused by any offenses committed in this life, yet it is a fruit of my past deeds which happen to ripen at this moment. It is not something which any humans or gods could have given to me. Let me therefore accept patiently and with an open heart this bitter fruit of my own making without resentment or complaint against anyone. This is a very useful way to cut off resentment, ill will, is when we are mistreated somehow or other, to tell oneself that this is the effect of a previous cause, that this is karma. Somehow, even though there's nothing we can think of that we've done that could have earned us this pain, that there must be something back there. It's this kind of self-talk is just a kind of practical thing to, I mean, even better than going through this mental exercise of the described by Bodhidharma is having no ego, so that when you're mistreated, then you can just let it go. It just passes through you. But that's, of course, extremely advanced state. And so when negative feelings come up as a result of someone else's rudeness or bad treatment of one, then this can help. It's better. Even this kind of self-talk, which is not the real essence of the Zen work, it's better than harboring ill will toward the person. When Zen Master Zhao Zhou was asked if a dog has enlightened nature or not, he said, "Mu. If you can really understand this Mu, you will surely be free from doubts about anything in or out of this world. For example, when you first enter, he means enter the first gate, your first kensho, when you first enter, you shatter being and nothingness. Having shattered being and nothingness, if you nurture it energetically, you break through the body. Having broken through the body, if you work hard, you break through the mind. Having broken through body and mind, the original mind appears. When you reach that, then there is no doubt about what the world-honored Buddha taught. There are hells, there are heavens, there are enlightened ones and devils, hungry ghosts and animals. There is retribution. You will have no doubts at all about the sutras." At the very least, most people are able to appreciate that we go through states of mind that are hellish or heavenly, that are states of craving like hungry ghosts and deep reactive delusion like animals and so forth. And then we see here, Bunan used to say to his group, "There is no special principle in this practice of the way. It's only necessary to see and hear directly. Directly seeing, there is no seeing. Directly hearing, there is no hearing. You must fuse inside and outside into one solid, thoroughly peaceful state before you can do this. Directly seeing, there is no seeing. What does this mean? In Buddhism, we talk about the emptiness of the three wheels. And these are the three aspects of sense perceptions. So in the case of hearing, the three wheels are the act of hearing, the one who's hearing, the object heard, and the act of hearing. If these are seen and realized as without substantiality to them, then this is no seeing, or it's no hearing, and so forth with the others. Same with thoughts, as the sixth sense. When we see the emptiness of thoughts and ourself as well, and the whole matter of thinking, then our thoughts are no thoughts, as Hakuin says. Although you people are Buddhas right now, and meaning, of course, enlightened, you don't realize it. If you know, you go against the Buddhas and patriarchs. If you don't know, you revolve in the routine of birth and death. At this point, if you don't have the transcendental eye, how can you attain realization? So what's he mean here? If you know you're a Buddha, you go against the Buddhas and patriarchs. When Zen Master Dogen, this is what prompted his awakening, his life koan up to his the point where he met his teacher Eisai, was why, if we all have this Buddha nature, do we not know it and have to work so hard to realize it? And in response to that question, Eisai said to him, "No Buddha is conscious of its existence, while cats and cows are aware of it." No Buddha is conscious of its existence. In other words, no truly enlightened person thinks of herself or himself as enlightened in a way that other people aren't. That is, don't identify yourself or think of yourself as special in any way. No Buddha is conscious of its existence in its essential nature. It doesn't think in those terms. It doesn't conceptualize itself, himself or herself. While cats and cows are aware of it. Cats and cows is a metaphor for the deluded. The deluded are keenly drawing this division between the enlightened and the unenlightened. Although our school considers enlightenment in particular to be fundamental, that doesn't necessarily mean that once you're enlightened, you stop there. It is necessary to practice according to reality and complete the way. According to reality means knowing the fundamental mind as it really is. Practice means getting rid of obstructions caused by habitual actions by means of true insight and knowledge. Awakening to the way is comparatively easy, accomplishment of practical application, is what is considered most difficult. That is why the great teacher Bodhidharma said that those who know the way are many, whereas those who carry out the way are few. So it's one thing to have a glimpse into one's true nature, another thing to purify oneself through and through to the point where these blind passions and delusions of every kind are really cut, uprooted. So the four vows are vows that all of us, wherever we are on this path, can chant with great sincerity. If you can really get to see your fundamental mind, you must treat it as though you were raising an infant. Walking, standing, sitting, lying down, illuminate everything everywhere with awareness, not letting him be dirtied by the seven consciousnesses. Illuminate everything everywhere with awareness. That's the work. Being fully aware at all times. Not letting this mind, this true mind, be sullied by the seven consciousnesses or the whole process of going off in trains of thought, basically. If you can keep him clear and distinct, it is like the baby's gradually growing up until he's equal to his father. Calmness and wisdom, clear and penetrating, your function will be equal to that of the Buddhas and patriarchs. Calmness and wisdom. These are the two aspects of Buddhist meditation. First, we have to calm the mind, which we do through a concentration practice, like breath or koan. And then, once the mind is calmed, then we have to see into it. That's the wisdom side of things. Calmness is just calmness. You can be calm without any insight into the mind. This is the great difficulty in any sesshin, as the mind of everyone is becoming more and more calm as the days go by, but then, after sesshin, it will be roiled up again by all of the circumstances and conditions that we go back to. The calmness, in other words, is a conditioned phenomenon. It's susceptible to changing conditions. And so when we get into these deeper states of calm, we have to be alert not to get complacent and just settle in, be lulled by that wonderful state of calm, but to keep looking. It's like so these two aspects of meditation have been called like two wings of a bird. If you have just the calmness, or just the insight without the sustained work of maintaining that, then it's not going to fly. Now, the reason we consider human life best is because of the opportunity it holds to realize true liberation in this lifetime. However, if you seek profit and support, he's talking to monks who would be more concerned about getting things from donors. If you seek profit and support, considering these the ultimate truth, in every moment of thought used by delusive ideas, vainly ending your life, at the time of death, nothing you can do will be any use. The Buddha came into the world to guide those on the paths of illusion, directly pointed to the fundamental mind, letting them leave behind birth, death, and myriad things. That's the end of the section on Bunan, and we're just about at the end of our time, so I won't start the section, another section I'd marked, but we'll stop here and recite the four vows.